When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Science proves quality sleep is vital to your mental, emotional, and physical health. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to help keep you both effortlessly comfortable. And it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. So you're at your best for yourself and those you care about most. Life-changing sleep, only from Sleep Number. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $899. Save $200, plus free home delivery when you add an adjustable base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
Not just bikes. We also make a rower.
Have you ever tried to row? Too hard.
Not with Form Assist. It actually teaches you how to row. So it doesn't matter if you're a first-time rower or a seasoned pro. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Hey, everybody. Luke here. I just wanted to do a quick intro before we get into this episode. You'll notice that Mike is absent. He had some stuff come up. So you're probably missing his sultry, deep, wonderful voice. But he will be back. And thankfully we had our good buddy Matt Lacaraza fill in for him. And we're always grateful to have Laco, a.k.a. the Gracious Youngster, fill in. We talked to Derek Webb in this episode. Derek is one of my favorite songwriters of all time. I've been a fan of his since the early 2000s, and I strongly recommend you check out his catalog, and check out his Patreon. He's doing some really cool stuff, which we'll get into in this episode. And speaking of Patreon, this is technically a Patreon bonus episode, but once every few months, I'm just going to put the whole thing out for everyone, and I'm eventually going to stop doing that. But if you're not a patron and you're hearing this and you want to be a patron, go to patreon.com/longmayyouyoung. We have bonus episodes. We have me and Russ do Neil covers. There's a ton of fun stuff that goes on the Patreon, so definitely check it out. And shout out to our top-tier patrons, Craig Bitch, John Locke, and Mark Ray. patreon.com/longmayyouyoung. Definitely check it out. And one more thing. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that me and Russ are in the band Town Meeting. We are starting to tour slowly again, and we have some dates coming up in June. They haven't been announced yet, but they will be announced very soon. We'll be in Philly, New York, Boston, Vermont, up in Canada. We're kind of bouncing, starting in the Northeast and expanding out. But if you live in any of those cities or know anyone who does, we really, really would love you to come out. We'll definitely do some Neil covers. We almost always do. Look for those dates, townmeetingmusic.com or facebook.com/townmeeting. That's my shameless plug. Now let's get into the episode with Derek Webb.
This is our Neil Young podcast, where we mostly talk out of our ass while going through the works of Mr. Young. It's Mike Hsu and the Condon Boys, Trans and Harvest and Linois. We're gonna sit and listen to each one.
And welcome to another episode of Long May You Young. You're hearing my voice and not Mike's because it's Valentine's Day and Mike is clearly trying to get laid. So he's not here right now, which is why we got Laco filling in for us in the mic spot. And we're very excited to have our special guest, Derek Webb, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Nashville native. In my mind, one of the more similar artists to Neil Young than anyone else that I listen to.
And we'll get into that as we go on. but I wanted to have Derek on because all the Spotify, Neil, Joe Rogan stuff, I noticed Derek posting a lot of very interesting stuff, and I kind of wanted to get his take on it, and we'll dive into all that as well. But I guess before anything else, what's up, Derek? How are you, man?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
This is the first time we all seen each other in a while.
It's been 5 or 6 years, I think.
And stupid.
I also want to say that you saying that Mike Shue's not here because he's getting laid means that all of us are here because we can't get laid.
That's I kind of took that. And I'm a new dad, so I was like,
That stings.
Listen, Russ, you know, you're putting that out there. I'm not. All right.
Yeah. Well, I literally just ran in the door, made myself a wrap. So I'm dribbling barbecue sauce while I talk. I apologize.
Nice.
It's living the best life.
So Derek, before we get into anything else, are you a Neil fan? Are you a Neil's music fan?
I'm a huge Neil fan. I've always been a Neil fan because like Neil does whatever the hell Neil wants, and he always has, and I've always loved that. I mean, like, if you just look at this guy's personal history, if you want to look into it, I mean, he does what, and his music has always been, like the soundtrack for the resistance a little bit. You know, he's been actively rebellious in every way that I think he has been able to since he was like a teenager, and he's still doing it. He's still, I mean, look at the guy. I mean, you know, like all this stink that he stirred up in the last couple of weeks. So, and yes, I love his music. Good God. I mean, I love his records. So yeah, I mean, well, so, cause we talked about this previously, and I warned you that I'm not like I don't know. When you told me you had like a Neil Young podcast, I was like, I don't think I'm qualified to go on a Neil Young podcast, but I mean, I love Neil. But it would be like
favorite record.
Harvest has got to be my favorite. I mean, I hate to be that guy. I mean, I know that's like everybody's, you know, but
it's
like
totally fair. And the other thing I would point out, Derek, is that they, by their own admission, are not qualified to have a Neil Young.
Not at all. Not even a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, no. So I love Harvest. Of course I love Harvest, and I love like Silver and Gold. I love the rock stuff too. Absolutely. I love it. But like, as far as like Neil records that I actually listen to like regularly, that's going to be Harvest and Silver and Gold. Those records are absolutely
interesting. Wow. Yeah. I mean, Harvest I get, cause you know, you're
Silver
an
and Gold,
guy.
You don't hear a lot though. Yeah.
Silver and Gold is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Why that one? I'm curious. Like, did you just get it at a young age or like,
no, I mean, well, let's see. Let me try to look and see when
well, Silver and Gold was 2000.
Okay.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. So. I guess that, so, I thought it was older.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It must have just been, it was probably for some reason a Neil record that I remember, I didn't go back and find. I remember like when it came out.
Right.
And I think I probably just got it and just connected with it. And it was just, it's like, I'm like that with, who else? Like James Taylor. Like I have random James Taylor records that I really love. Not because they're standout James Taylor records. Anybody else really cares that much about over another. It's just that they came out at a particular time.
Yep.
What's that one? Let's see. What's that one that? I won't do it to you.
While
not a James Taylor podcast.
While you think of it, though, I'll say Silver and Gold came out in 2000, and I think the reason that you love it so much is probably for the same reasons why I love Harvest and Silver and Gold so much is that they're both big Ben Keith albums. And I'm a huge Ben Keith fan. And if you don't know who Ben Keith is, that's okay. He was the pedal steel player.
Okay.
And he is incredible. And I believe he helped produce that record. And that's probably why you're drawn to that sound, because Ben Keith was a Nashville
interesting
studio musician. I highly recommend you look into his work. He's incredible.
Great.
And, he's good.
Oh, do you?
So he's got that really, really pretty, clean.
Yeah.
And so both those records are just really beautiful. I mean, Harvest is all over the place in ways, but Silver and Gold is like kind of straightforward, just pretty clean.
Well, and I think the other thing I like about those records in particular, and I don't know that this isn't true of a lot of Neil's records, but I know it is of these two, is that they are stark in their arrangement. to the extent that if I hear a song off of Harvest, I know it was on Harvest. And if I hear a song from Silver and Gold, I absolutely know, because those records, those collections have a sound. Like, they really found, I mean, Harvest is, it has a little more kind of an orchestration and, you know, Man Needs a Maid, like, kind of goes, I mean, it's like, they go all over the place in terms of arrangement, but they have very distinct sounds, those records. And, so I feel like I hear, even when I haven't listened to it in a while, when I hear a tune off one of those records, I'll just know what record it was on, because it's just the sound of those records. And maybe it does have to do with the steel player, who is incredible, now that I know his name.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, and you said it, and I would say it too, you always feel like you have to qualify Harvest, but it is, I mean, it's his top five record easily, if not his best.
Legendary records. It's like, I'm not going to apologize for Joni Mitchell Blue. I'm not going to apologize for, I mean, like, these are some of the, I mean, they're just some of the best albums of all time. You know, times they're changing. I mean, like, sue me. It's like, they're classics for a reason, you know? And yeah, Harvest is absolutely in that pantheon of all time great records.
So you sort of brought it up, Derek, but we should maybe get into a little bit of your history, but then also our sort of history.
Oh, sure.
So you said we haven't seen each other since we were in Nashville,
right?
Which was the only time we met. So Luke and I, as most of the listeners probably know by now, we're in a band called Town Meeting.
Yeah.
And we played a show at, what was it, the Mercy Lounge?
Yes.
Yes.
Mercy Lounge, which was a part of this thing that Adam Duritz puts on. And Derek, you were there as...
For Pledge Music, wasn't it?
At that time, yeah. So I started this company, Noise Trade, a long time ago. And ran it for many years, and it was like an indie thing.
Noise Trade ruled, by the way.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I mean, it's like we helped a lot of artists give away a lot of music and get a lot of emails and zip codes for a lot of fans and put them all in bed together so they could go off and mutually benefit from each other. And that was like kind of what our mission was. We sold our company in, I forget what year, to Pledge Music, who was a London and New York-based company. And then I, in the transition, continued running Noise Trade for a minute. And then also kind of had a gig with Pledge as well, because they had no Nashville office. And then Pledge spectacularly went bankrupt fucked so many artists over. It was awful. I mean, I just felt awful. But anyways, yeah. No. I mean, yeah. All my friends, unfortunately. Now, I had nothing to do with that. And that's a story for another time. But at that time, I think, Noise Trade and or Pledge or both were hooked somehow to the Adam Duritz deal that he does it's like this thing for over a weekend where there's like 100 bands, you know, or whatever, and they play on every, and we did over at Mercy where there's like three stages and there were bands and you guys were playing.
That's been obviously a big shout out to Adam Duritz for doing that, him and Ryan. And I know they might not be collaborating as much anymore, but they were huge helps to a lot of bands like us.
Still are.
And Adam has been a huge help to us. And I remember when we found out we were doing that show, I was excited in so many ways because we're going to Nashville. It's part of this Adam Duritz thing. And then we found out that you were going to be there. And Luke and I were like, holy shit.
Hold on, Russ, you're misremembering this, because this is a classic. So whenever me and Russ, it's the same thing as the Willem Dafoe thing.
Where
I said we played a show up in Maine, and then before the show, me and Russ were going through a shoe store, and it was Rennie's in
Portland, Maine. Yeah, it's like an outdoor sort of. Yeah.
Okay.
But there was a guy there, and he looked just like Willem Dafoe, and I go to Russ, I'm like, that guy looks just like Willem Dafoe, and Russ is like, dude, that fucking is Willem Dafoe.
I was like, no. That is Willem. You don't, there's no other.
Yeah. Nobody who's not Willem Dafoe looks like Willem Dafoe. Nobody.
The picture of them with Willem Dafoe, I just have to add, is
It's just ridiculous.
Unbelievable. Like the fact that he was just like, you ran into Willem Dafoe shopping for pants and he was super cool about taking
He was the nicest guy. Such a great vibe. Yeah.
So that's the same thing that happened with Derek, is we played that festival. I don't even think we knew he was involved. And I think we were watching the Harmalies. And then I look over, I'm like, that guy looks just like Derek Webb. And you're like, I think that is Derek Webb. And then we went over and talked to him.
And then I think Derek, we sat down for a while. We hung out for a couple of drinks. Yeah. And we had a good time. And the Harmonies.
You guys were amazing. Like, you guys played. But I know that I've seen, I mean, unless I'm losing my mind, I feel like I have seen you guys play more than one time. God knows. I'm positive I have. Because I feel like I've seen I feel like I've seen more than one set of you guys.
We've been in Nashville a couple of times.
Maybe I'm losing my mind. Did you guys ever do any Noise Trade South By parties?
I don't think so.
I wish.
Okay. Yeah, I wish.
Well, anyways, I mean, you guys were unbelievable, put on such a crazy set. And so I was like freaking out, you know. And then the fact that you guys had any context for who I was like, okay, well, shut up. I'm trying to, I'm not done gushing about the set you guys played. So I don't,
I don't know what
you're talking about.
That's huge.
Anyway, so it was very sweet of you guys to make an old man feel.
Oh no, man. I was, Luke and I both we've been huge fans for a long time. I think one of the first times I ever sang without drumming at the church, because I used to be the drummer and I would do the background vocals. One of the first times I sang out on my own without playing the drums was Wedding Dress.
Brave Man
covered it, so that was like a big deal for me.
Wow.
And we've been huge fans for a long time, and I still have a ticket, Luke, when we went and saw Derek that one time.
Oh, yeah, we saw him up.
I still have that ticket stub. I'll try
Princeton
to find it by the end of the call.
Whoa!
Yeah, I don't know where it was. Where was it, Luke?
It was in Princeton or something like that. It was at a church. And
it was at a church.
You said shit from stage.
You did that thing where you said shit, and you were like, people will be more offended. Because who was that? Sure. Was that?
Oh, Tony Campolo. It's a classic.
Classic
Campolo move.
But I had never been in that type of situation. Inside, I was like, fuck yeah. But of course, I wouldn't have vocalized that at the time.
Well, you would have upstaged me. So,
yeah, exactly.
So I do want to, since we're talking about this, I want to kind of get into why I think Derek reminds me of Neil a lot. So,
yes.
For most of our listeners, they already know that me and Russ, you know, we grew up evangelical. We've since, you know, parted ways.
Sure.
In some sense of that. But, Derek also grew up in a evangelical band called Cademan's Call. Not grew up. He was in Cademan's Call. And then he started his solo career not long after that.
So, Derek, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like 10 years with Cademan's and then like 15-ish with as a solo.
We started Cademan's in 92. I made my first, I released my first solo record, I think, in 2002.
Wow.
And then I'm still doing it. So it's been however many years that is.
Targets is great, by the way, man.
It's thank really you.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, thanks for that.
There's so much to get into.
There was a new record today. I was like, I fingers crossed was the last thing I heard. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, that's the second to newest record. So that's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, there's another one that I don't know about. I'm psyched to listen tonight. So.
But cool. This is interesting because all four of us grew up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
even, yeah. Well, just for some context, I help them out when Mike's not around.
Yep.
Luke texts me today and he's like, hey man, we're gonna have Derek Webb on. And I was just like, you know what? We're like, why? Like, how? What? And he was
that makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, he told me like 6 years ago that you guys met, and then he reminded me today, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You guys are kind of buddies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you know, so,
Oh
no, sorry. I was just gonna say, so Derek, and I think you'll like this, Derek. Derek to me is Neil Young plus Rich Mullins with a hint of David Bazan mixed.
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah. That's sure.
That's more than 100%. So okay. that's too much.
For sure.
So like Neil, I started listening to Derek's music around 2005 when you put out Mockingbird for free.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of, I'm sure, record executives and all
that. My own record label, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I loved it. It was very anti-war, which no one was doing at the time, especially in Christian music. Right. So this is another interesting thing. I don't introduce you as a Christian. I mean, now it doesn't.
No, maybe, right. Yep.
But even back then, you were just kind of, you would do what you wanted to do. It didn't matter what your record label said. It didn't matter what your fans' expectations were. And to me, that's so Neil.
Mm.
And because he all throughout the 80s, he got sued by David Geffen for sounding enough like Neil.
Yes.
And I feel like you've had nothing but like genuine, you released a super pro LGBTQ album in the height of all that nonsense back in the late 2000s. And
right.
I feel like content wise, you do what you want to do. And also style wise, you do a folk sounding album and then you do an electronic sounding album, and they're all really great. So I just I really respect what you do. I feel like you kind of do what you want to do and what you feel like you should do, and you don't really listen to anything but your own conscience, your own heart. And I just, I don't know. I don't want to just keep.
That means so much, man. Well, I really appreciate it. I mean, that's what I try. That's what I think I'm doing. I don't really know. I mean, it's hard to make a living sometimes antagonizing everybody. Like you have to leave some people to buy the records or whatever to give you money. You know, you have to leave some people to feel unconflicted about paying you. But I receive that. I mean, I do feel as though I have always tried to follow coordinates a little bit and whatever I thought was important. And I think I had the luxury of having spent 10 years in a band that was on a major label. I spent most of my solo career on a major label, but not all of it. But Cademan's was. And you know, I had the benefit of having 10 years of pretty moderate success at it. Got some taste of how you get that, how you sustain that, and what kind of the costs are of doing that. And so by the time I got to my solo career, by the time I got out of Cademan's, I'd already had more career than most people get in this business. And so I was already like, okay, if I'm done tomorrow, I'm nothing but grateful for all this. And so to start a solo career with the benefit of kind of understanding how the thing works and kind of the moves you can make, but what they'll cost you. It was such a gift to go in with that, because then I was like, oh, like I can actually make records when I want, about what I want. They can sound like what I like. And I can make those choices. Those are choices. That's all they are. But there will be a cost. And so my audience will always be very super small. Like I will always be a niche artist. But I was super happy to do that. I'm just happy to be able to do it. I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You guys are blue collar like I am, and you work really hard at it. And it's like, I'm just thrilled to have the work. I'm just thrilled to have people who resonate with it and are willing to get behind it and support it. And people for whom I feel as though resonate deeply enough with it that it kind of becomes part of their soundtrack, just like it's mine. And like that's what and to be able to accomplish all that and still pay the mortgage is such an unbelievable gift that makes no sense. And so like I'm at this, and you just get spoiled on it. Like after a while, I'm like, well, you know, by the time I was, let's say, so by the time Mockingbird came out, that was my third record. And then Ringing Bell, which was like Electric Mockingbird. So it was more songs about peace and war and about the government and whatever. And then Stockholm Syndrome came after that, which is, I think, the other one you mentioned, which was like an electronic record and kind of non.
Stockholm Syndrome ruled, by the way.
Thank you for that. Well, I mean, it was kind of like poking the church about how they fumble with, you know, loving the gay community. And so anyways, like after a while, I realized, oh, like,
sorry, I like how you worded fumble with.
Yeah,
how they treat the gay community.
Yeah, they fumble. They fumble with it.
It's a big fumble.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Still a big fumble.
Yeah, they're still fumbling their way down the field with it. But it's like what I realized after a while was that it actually started to work out, because it was the handful of folks who managed to stay around were expecting it. They were expecting me to, you know, have to kind of be going after whatever the next thing was that seemed like it needed to be gone after, and no one else was willing to go after. It's like I'm always on the lookout for what are those topics, and so I'm always running after those things. And so when I wouldn't do it, it's like they'd be upset. People would be upset. So I was like, all right, the thing I used to think would have gotten me, would have worked me out of the job because nobody wants to hear it. Now, if I'm not making moves like that, the people who are with me are upset and not. You know, so if it's like, so if they like if the record lands too positively, I start sweating. Like, oh, I didn't do it enough. Like I didn't work hard enough to find the.
Yeah.
But and here's the last word on it, is that I think a lot of artists tend to be wired. I think there must be something ingrained in the personality of the average blue collar artist that they have that thing where they want people to like them. And it's like a people pleasing thing or whatever it is. It's very common. It's not just an artist, but I have other problems, but I don't have that one. And so I am not wired that way. Like I am like the opposite. Like I don't mind confrontation. I like bringing up things. I don't have any problem with people not liking me or not understanding me. It really doesn't bother me at all, really at all. And so I've kind of early on realized, oh, if I have this weird wiring and I've wound up in this job, I should really take that really seriously. And I should really let that be the grid through which I'm looking at my work, because there are a lot of artist friends of mine who I know have extremely strong opinions, who are very articulate on all the issues and many more that I have tried to write songs about and talk about in my career, and going to spend my social cachet on. But they are on platforms that are just too tall and have too many other people's jobs wound up in them to where they can't take those kind of risks. And that's why I've always tried to keep my platform as a solo artist very low to the ground, because that way I'm not fearful of destroying it, because there's not really that much to it. As long as I can stay.
Sure, but I think you, sorry to interrupt, but
no,
I think
that's it.
I feel like you would still sort of, even if you were on that other sort of platform, I feel like that wouldn't hinder you from still doing. It's interesting that we're talking about this right now, because the next album that we're covering, I don't know if Luke told you, is we're covering the Monsanto Years, which is Neil's album that he did with Promise of the Real, the first one he did with Promise of the Real.
So good, by the way.
Which right there, it's right in the title. I mean, there's no fucking around with it. It's
right.
This is what it is. And every song, there's not a ton of poetry to it. You know, it's straight up, you know,
dogmatic,
United, fuck you, you know, fuck you, Monsanto, fuck you, Starbucks. He essentially straight up says these things, you know?
Right.
And so I feel as though, have you heard this comparison before? The one Luke just said, the Neil Young has this.
No.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Because the more we get into it, the more I'm like, wow, yeah, Luke makes a great point.
Russ, if you think about it, like, we'll go from an album like Ragged Glory to Silver and Gold, and they couldn't be more opposite albums. And it's the same guy who's just like, I want to do this now. And that's like, even Derek going from like Mockingbird to Ringing Bell to Stockholm Syndrome, then to an album like Control, which is one of my favorite albums that you made, by the way.
The one that the least people have on the planet, for sure.
But it's so good. And it's just you. It's just I just feel like you're like, I want to do this now.
And it's really true. I mean, I've had that.
Yeah, I guess I just was essentially trying to say that you shouldn't sell yourself short to the fact that, like you say, a blue collar musician. But at the same time, well, this is another thing Luke and I talk about all the time, because there's so many different levels to being an artist, right? Especially a musician, where we play coffee shops or we play open mics sometimes, just. And people will look at us like we're royalty, and we don't feel that way at all. And we look at you like you're royalty, you know. And then all of us look at Neil like he's royalty, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just there's never ending cycles of this.
And everybody just working their asses off.
Right. And so I wanted to say that I think the comparison holds even more than we all even might realize, because I think you would, even if you had Neil's, you would make a Monsanto if that was. You know what I'm saying? I think even if you had that level that Neil has, that's just the type of person, type of artist you are. And
I absolutely appreciate it. I receive it. And I think you're probably right. I mean, the way that I, in terms of like what my instincts are, I think you're right about that. And first of all, like you guys, I have figured out how to make a living at this. Like I'm wily and we haven't yet.
I don't want to. we're working.
But you're still doing it, you know. You're refusing to say die. And
yes.
And so it's like, you know. So I have that absolutely, and I know that I can. That this is the value, and I've always known it, of really deeply connecting with the people who resonate the most with what you're doing, because those are the people whose shoulders, you know, you'll be on for those thin years. And so I think knowing that, for one thing, it makes me very, very risk tolerant, because I can take chances because I know that I can still make a living at it. But also there is something self-sabotaging about my rhythm. Like I think that's the reason I'm absolutely don't think I'm ambitious or talented enough to be like on a certain level of platform. I'm just not made that way. I'm not that kind of artist. And that's not a good or a bad thing either way. Not for the people who are there, not for the people who aren't. But if I ever have, in the times in my career, I've gotten up a little higher than other seasons of my career, then I'm immediately, I look at whatever it is that you get, whatever, and you guys know this feeling too, because you've, I mean, everybody who's done it for more than a minute, you kind of know what the hilltops and the valleys kind of feel like. And whenever you're on those hilltops, what I feel in those moments is, man, what am I going to spend this on? Mm. You know, I'm like, all righty. Like, that's why. And if you look at the trajectory of my career, you're going to see that, because Stockholm Syndrome would have been the biggest record I had out at that point. And so the very next record, I'm like, all right, what do I want to do with all the cachet that I've saved up from Stockholm Syndrome? Oh, I want to make a concept record about a guy who falls in love with a computer. And it's like, you know, I mean, it was like, it's like the weirdest record of all time. But I was like, well, that's what I want to do with all of this cachet I've now earned. I'm going to spend it all making this record that no one will understand, you know. And
was that pre her?
It was by like 18 months. Like, I've got no timing. If I so, yeah. It would have literally been the soundtrack.
You know what? That makes you more like Neil, because Neil was always right a step above all the popular
shit. Just a little too ahead of it, yeah.
With his Link
Not
Vault.
In the 80s.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, you know, these types of
weird. You're right. With some of his technology stuff.
Yeah, the Pono and all that. Like the,
totally right.
Yeah.
You're totally right. Anyways, so that's kind of, you know, that's how I feel. And if in the next few years, if God forbid, if, you know, things go well and the next record people like, and I feel like I'm on the top of a wave again, just watch what I do next. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, I just build it to burn it down. That's just, same. So, yeah.
That brings me to something else. So before I ask any more questions, I have so many threads, Derek, so I apologize in advance, because I feel like there's going to keep being spindly threads that shoot out, and we're going to try to have to find a way to connect them all, because I take notes before we podcast, but during a podcast where I'm like, oh, I want to come back to that. I've never done this before. So this is new for me, where I'm like writing shit down. I'm like, origins, deconstruction, whatever. I'm like all this stuff. And I already crossed out the Monsanto years comparison. So we're good. We got that one down.
And all the fans are now scared to death, because that's like the fact that he's taking notes. Like,
yeah.
All right. But go do it, Russ. Go.
Well, no, it's just, it's a testament to how great Derek is and how honored we are.
No, he's worthy of it. Yeah.
Grateful we are to have you. So, man, one thing that I that you just touched on, which made me want to talk about, was I unfortunately, when you started doing the Jesus Hypothesis thing, your Patreon, that was at the time, and everyone and all the listeners know, I don't mind being completely like vulnerable about my situations in life. That was like a time where I had been supporting some of my musician friends on Patreon.
Yeah.
And then just got hit with bad debt, and like it was just one of those times. And that was right when you were starting to do yours, and I was like, fuck, I wanted to get on that. And it was at the time where I just could not financially make any kind of moves like that for anything I wanted to do. But I was really, really, really like excited about it. And so I was like, eventually I'm going to get around to doing that. So are you able to talk a little bit about what that exactly is for our listeners?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Gosh, thank you for asking. It's like, you always feel like you have to plead with folks to talk about new stuff. Cause you're the only one who's typically excited about it, but, I would be normally, but, no, thanks for asking. Yeah. The G's Hypothesis is the new record. I'm working on it now. I'm probably 3/4 of the way written, and I'm still writing. I'm recording. And the deal that's been cool is, you know, I've got my little patron community, and I've been for them live. I've been writing and recording it live. I'm up here like in my studio, and I've got a handful of cameras up here, and I'll have all my guitars and my laptop and my phone. Everything's plugged in where I can like bring my laptop screen up, bring my phone up, bring everything up. And so like the first, and I've been doing these live stream writing sessions. That was like, I've done 20 something of them, and they're like 90 minutes each.
So hold on. You write like, yeah.
I have never done it before in my whole life.
And that scares the shit out of me.
No, I know. I didn't think I could do it.
That's why I love it so much. Cause it's literally like the Patreon members are a part of the, they're there for the whole thing, which I think is so cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I came up with the idea, I was like, well, that's a fun idea, but I don't know if I'll be able to do it because my wife, my best friends don't hear songs until I've obsessed over every conjunction until they're totally done. So I've never done anything remotely like that before. And so, but when I came up with the idea of it, especially a record about what the record's about, and I just felt like it would be an interesting thing to just pull the curtains, just to tear the curtains all the way down on and let at least my safe kind of people, not just for everybody, but for patrons to come and do it. It felt like fun. So I literally, on the first session one, I literally just turned on the cameras. I started and we went through like my phone. Usually when I start a record, when I start writing for a record, I don't usually write in the off season. So it's like, I don't write for like a year and then I will start writing. And that's when I know, oh, it's time soon to make a record again, because I'm writing again. And then I'll write 10 or 12 songs. I'll record them and I won't write for another year. Like that's literally how I always do it always. And so I brought I get my phone up and I'm scrolling through like voice recordings from the last 12 months and we're just listening to them. And I'm just going, listening
to them. Yeah, that's too vulnerable. I mean, I talked about being vulnerable, but I don't know if I could do that, man. Cause at the top of every one of mine, I'm like, okay, it's a C.
That's exactly what mine were.
You put your finger here and you hammer on there. Yeah. It's like so fucking stupid.
I'm in my car. I'm like 3 in the morning whispering like a stupid melody in my phone.
So we're talking about this. I can imagine Laco listening right now. Laco does improv, by the way, Derek. He's a very
bad. Okay.
And he's probably wondering why we're being such pussies about being on the spot.
I know.
Guys, buck up. Yes, and get out of here.
That's exactly what the hell.
No, I think I actually think it's awesome. And I similar to Russ, I'm in a situation where I was like, oh man, I want to buy in. I've also been a fan for a while, Derek. Pleasure to meet you. I would wish I could be involved. What are you learning? Like, are you like, that's what I'm curious. Cause like, you know, as somebody who does improv, I'm always like learning like, okay, like this is a new way to experience a creative process, which improv is literally every time.
It's incredible, dude.
What do you see like when you're bringing out these notes and you're getting feedback while you're like,
okay. So let me clarify at least what the deal is, because at the top of every one of these sessions, what I always give the same couple of disclaimers, and one of them is that this entire experience is rhetorical. Like I am monologuing. Like I do them on like unlisted YouTube links, and so I send those so patrons have them, and honestly, like, you know, somebody could join today and go back to writing session one and literally watch their way through and just watch the whole thing appear, you know, like, it's all going to be archived or whatever, but I always say like the chat that's going on YouTube, I'm not looking at it. I'm not probably ever going to look at it. You can say, please have an opinion. Yeah. Please say, oh, that line sucks. That line's great. Do whatever you want, but I'm not going to look at it. Don't try to get my, I'm not ignoring you. I know I am ignoring you, but I'm not, if you're trying to get my attention, don't think that I'm just ignoring you. I'm just literally not looking at it. Cause like what I've learned
do you really not look at them though?
I don't. No, I can't.
That temptation though.
I don't know.
I don't even have that up on my screen anywhere where I could see it. And so I don't look at it. But for me, like what I know is, and what I take very seriously and I've gotten really good at over many years is really boxing out around the inception, the creative moments, like when it's really happening. Like I don't let myself think about what's going to be the consequence of me having written this now, and who is this for, and what is anybody gonna like, and what kind of trouble, or it doesn't matter. None of that matters. I have to at least protect that, at least let it come out as honestly, vulnerably as possible. And then it's like a problem for my future self to deal with. But I at least want to get the thing written. And so I don't want to be thinking about what somebody likes or doesn't like about what I'm doing in real time. I can't have that information. I don't look at any of that. But what's been interesting about it, and to answer your question over there, is that what I figured out, and I guess I always kind of suspected this, but I've never had to put this to the test, believe it or not, in 25 or whatever years it's been, is that actually this year would have been 30. This is 30 years undone for my job.
Yeah. That's how old I am.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about how old I am. But anyways, what I always think I knew, but I've never wanted to test, is that if you just... There is nothing, as an encouragement to any artists who are hanging and listening, like there's nothing magic about it. Like it just takes blood, sweat, and tears and human misery. Like you just have to throw hours at it. Like if you just show up to do it, you will move forward. Like you will move the ball down the field.
Something will happen.
Something will happen. And, and you just show up and it just will. And so for me, what it typically consists of is me getting on camera, kind of catching everybody up on kind of what the status of the various songs I'm working on, what they are, what I've worked on when I've not been on camera, because I mean, you can't help it. Like I'm driving, I'm in the shower. I never stop obsessing over lyrics and stuff. So I'll make a ton of notes. I'll come back and I'll say, okay, here's where we are. Let me kind of play you up to the point where we are. And here's kind of what we're, where we're going. Here are the bits that I'm still working on. And then basically I just commentate. And luckily, and this, maybe this couldn't work for everybody, because I, if you can't already tell, I just love to talk. Like I'm just a talker. And so I'm just a talker. So I just commentate my way through. I just commentate whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so if I'm sitting there thinking about a particular line or a particular, kind of tagline, a stanza structure that I'm trying to build with a certain idea, I just talk my way through it and then I just talk it out. And I'm a verbal processor anyway. So I think for people who aren't, like my wife is not a verbal processor. So when we're processing a thing together, I will talk and talk and talk and talk, and she'll listen and listen, and then she will synthesize and bring, you know, the brilliance of the clear conclusion of the whole thing, you know, because she's been thinking. So she
processing. Yeah,
she processes in her head and then she comes out with it. And so that's how we do it. But like, so this sort of thing's perfect for me because and honestly, here's what's crazy. I feel like this record is actually, the momentum of it is so much better than probably any record I've ever made, because there is and has been this expectation from my patrons that I'm going to be doing this every once a week or so. I'm going to a couple times a week that I'm going to be on the cameras and I'm going to be writing. And so it's like, it'd be so in my normal rhythm where it's a very isolated type experience, I would like make a bunch of progress on a thing and then I would reward myself by not writing for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And like not touching it just because it's easier. It's just, I don't know, because it's just like a thing that's, I feel like I have no control over. So, but with this, I do that. And then a couple days later, I'm writing again. And the reason is because people, they're not over there tapping their feet. I don't think it's like they really care that much, but I feel like if I'm going to tell these folks that part of what they're getting is to be part of this experience and whatever, then I need to be up there. Like I need to be I need to be in there writing and doing that for them. And so it's got this great expectation on me, and it's gotten me way more disciplined and structured than I've probably ever been at this stage of a record, which has been a great thing for me. So that's
what I was gonna tell you for sure. I'm glad you got around to that, because like I really loved what you said about, like, and I really think it's true, having been a fan of yours, that you put that box around like not caring about what people think, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
But I was like, I know there's
fucking Neil, man.
Things you're getting from having, what'd you say? Hey, Russ,
I said, and very fucking Neil, man.
Oh, it is very fucking Neil. Yeah.
Hero.
But, I think I was like really curious what you are getting out of having people participate, because like as someone who does improv and like creates live,
right?
Like, even if like I try my best, there's a lot less ways to do it to not care about the audience right in front of you.
Right.
But I think though that, like it's really cool to hear that like having that partnership is driving you to just get to the table more often.
Yes. Right.
Are there other things you think you're getting from like having an audience? Like, is there anything else that you think is changing about your process besides just like the drive to do more?
Right. I don't know yet. And I don't know that I'll know till I'm
done.
Fine.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll probably have a lot when I'm finished writing, at least, because then that's like the hardest part for me. And then when we're just purely recording, it's so much, it'll be so much easier. And I have told folks that I will watch the chat while we're recording. I actually would like to hear if somebody thinks like a certain sound or a certain beat or a certain whatever is cool. Like I'm into hearing about that. Like that's sure. cool with me. I mean, yeah. But I think that the thing that's weird about it, the thing that's weird about the process, and I'm curious if you'll resonate with this. I'm curious that you will. Is that the strange thing is that by the time I'm done, the people who have really watched a lot of it and who have really paid attention, and I'm recording acoustic demos of songs as I finish them and then delivering those also to patrons so they kind of have an acoustic version of the record as we go. And so they are going to know so much more about where I'm at and about just all the, and kind of what the record is for sure. And just, they're going to know so much more than I will so much sooner than I will, because I won't have any kind of objectivity about any of it. Like they've just been objectively observing. They're going to know. And I'm like, I don't know if you, I mean, here in Nashville, you know, everybody from, you know, my barista to my mailman, we all know each other's Enneagram numbers. It's like such a thing in Nashville. And I'm apparently a raging five, which means I really crave information. And so for me, not knowing, like being the one person who doesn't know something about myself and knowing that all these other people will, based on them having objectivity and watching me write and hearing my weird reasons for why I wrote that way and wrote those words that way in that song and why that was an important idea to put on the record with those songs to balance it. I don't even know what I'm balancing yet. They're looking at the scale. Yeah. So it's like, it's going to be a weird and interesting thing. And I bet when I'm finished, I'll be able to like have some perspective on what happened back there, you know, but like, yeah. I'm the one in the wreck. Everybody else are just the bystanders watching the wreck happen. So it's like, they're going to know a lot more about what happened before I will. Which is weird and interesting, I think.
Yeah.
It's super fascinating.
That's great. Yeah. I want to come back a little bit to sort of the beginning here, in that one thing that I was drawn to, and this kind of ties in a few different threads here, I guess, because...
hold on, Russ.
What?
I'm just realizing how self-indulgent this episode is.
No, we're getting back
We just want to talk to Derek about his...
No.
No, it'll all come back to Neil.
I don't give a shit what our listeners want.
If our fucking listeners don't, then they can fuck off.
This is more Neil. What you guys are doing, hijacking your own podcast, is more Neil than
they really... True.
As much as we shit on ourselves, our podcast really is very Neil, it's fucking lo-fi. No episode's ever the same. It's always fucking just like
you're right, dude.
It's ridiculous.
In other words, take it. You got it.
Yeah.
And to kind of tie into what you were saying there with the Patreon thing, we started a Patreon for the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been similar, Luke, as far as like getting that kind of feedback and then knowing that like people actually give a fuck about this thing that we're doing. And I think some of our listeners will probably go and want to contribute to your thing. So if they do, if you guys do, make sure you let Derek know that that you're a youngster.
Please.
We call our fans youngsters. So
love it.
It's horrible. Best,
transitioning back to Neil. I do want to ask you, Derek, what was it that drew you to this Neil Spotify situation?
One of my threads has exactly to do with that.
So I'll allow it, but watch it.
No. Here's the thing. So today at work, I'm painting a house and I just started working with this new crew. Normally it's just me and one other guy, but I started with this other crew. And one of the guys is very, very right wing and, you know,
so Russ, just like Russ is. Russ is super right wing.
Trumper. Know me. Yep. Yeah. There's don't pay any attention to my big fucking Bernie sign. But no. So I'm working with this new guy, and the first day I knew right away. I could tell this guy is very right wing. Very, you know, whatever. So on the way to the car, I'm like walking to the car, and I'm like, okay, it's not going to be a good working experience if I don't like somehow kind of find a way to bridge with this guy. Yeah. So we're walking in the car and I know he's going to see my Bernie sticker. He's going to give me shit. I already know it. I feel it. It's coming. So he sees my Bernie sticker and he's like, oh, fucking Bernie. Of course you're a fucking Bernie guy. And I'm like, I'm like, okay, here's what I should do in this situation. And it all came to me quick because I'm already prepared.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, so what I say is, yes, you're right. I like Bernie. I'm a Bernie guy. But you, it might make you like me to know that I don't like Biden. I'm not a Biden fan. And for that, and I go into all those reasons. And then all of a sudden, we're like vibing on a topic that we have in common because yeah. – I, you know, whatever.
Because
we get into
nothing
all that
unifies like a common enemy, right, Derek?
Exactly. Exactly. And so we're oh, you know, geez. and then we have this conversation and it's cool and it's great, whatever. Yeah. But I still know going forward from the work in this situation is going to be touch and go because I also can't not be vocal about certain things.
Yeah.
So anyway, I come into work today and then they're asking me like what I'm doing out for Valentine's Day or whatever. And then
I was like, I'm going to podcast and eat.
Yeah, I'm going to. Exactly. I'm going to be recording a podcast. And so I was like, yeah, I do this Neil Young podcast, whatever.
Oh, boy.
And then, of course, the guy right away goes, not a big fan of Neil Young right now. And so he launches into his whole, this
He's
whole fucking thing.
He's a communist, dude. He's a communist.
And, you know, this whole thing. And, but it was funny because then his whole point is he's trying to make a point about like, all I'm saying is keep politics out of it. You know, just keep politics out of it, man, out of your music. And I'm like, you like that song, Ohio? And he's like, which one's that? I sing it for him. Like, Tin Soldiers in. And he's like, yeah, I like that song. I'm like, yeah, you know that was written like the fucking day after, you know? And so I get into this thing with him. And also it's hilarious because this guy, more than almost anyone I've ever worked with, like later in the conversation, we were talking about the halftime show. From the Super
Which
Bowl,
which ruled, by the way. We don't need to talk about it, but it was so fucking good.
So cool. I was working with two of the crew today, and it was this lady and him, and I was like, we were talking about the halftime show. I was like, yeah, it was great. I love this and love that. And she was like, yeah, Eminem was my favorite. And then he goes, well, yeah, I'm just glad they let at least a white guy in there. And I was geez. And so I'm like, okay, this guy's talking about keep politics out of your music, but I'm like, why don't we keep politics out of work? How about that? You fucking like,
he really said that?
Oh yeah, he said that.
Ew,
and
dude,
you know me, Luke. I'm just like, oh fuck, how am I gonna work this job? You know, but like, I'm so broke, I need the job. But I'm like, fuck. But anyway, Derek, that all that crazy rambling is to Luke's question.
Yeah.
What exactly was it? Because clearly, it's infecting you said, Neil is still relevant. The guy's 75, and he's. Yeah. He's still making a huge impact, you know, like
absolutely.
So what exactly and where do you land and all that stuff?
Yeah. Well, so for one thing, Eminem was there on merit.
Yeah. Right.
Period.
Yeah.
So let me say this first. I have always, there's a job description for artists that I've always liked. And this is like the way, and you can, different people can have different opinions on this. But in my opinion, the job of an artist is to look at the world and describe it. Look at the world, tell us what you see, that's the job. And it doesn't mean that every artist is gonna have a political lens in the grid through which they're looking at the world, and that might not be part of how they describe the world that they see or whatever. But it certainly is, an option. It's not incumbent on artists to do it. Some artists are just make rad dance music, and that's all, and that's what they want to do. It's no compromise to do exactly that. And then you've got like Rage Against the Machine, and you've got Neil Young, and you've got and it would be a compromise for any of those people to not do exactly what they do. But to say like to keep politics out of it, I mean, it what it does is, and this is very on topic. Is it just immediately puts guardrails on free speech, which makes no sense. Artists look at the world, they describe it, and that's the job. And if it sounds political to you, if you don't like it, don't listen to it. You can exercise your free speech also by not listening and disengaging from it. And like, in other words, rather than, do we want to constrain more or do we want to liberate more? Because if we want to liberate more, that means more voices and more choices. Mm. But if we want to constrain, it means fewer voices and fewer choices. And that's not, I don't believe where America does its best work is in constraining in that way. And so, and I don't think that's what free speech is all about if you really want to argue both ends of it, which absolutely has been coming up over the last few weeks with all this Neil Young Rogan stuff.
To interrupt you really quick, this is actually brings up perfect timing as far as we're such a good Neil Young podcast that when we did our episode on this, we didn't ever really quote Neil Young. We're just really good like that.
Yeah,
but that makes me want to quote from his. If you're not on the Neil Young archives, by the way, Derek, it's amazing. You should get on there. So from his letter that he wrote in his Neil Young archives, Times Contrarian, this is the end of it here. Before the actual end, it says, when I left Spotify, I felt better. And then he says, I support free speech. I have never been in favor of censorship. Private companies have the right to choose what they profit from, just as I can choose not to have my music support a platform that disseminates harmful information. I am happy and proud to stand in solidarity with the frontline healthcare workers.
And pays artists terribly, and is horrible. Sorry.
I am happy and proud to stand in solidarity with the frontline healthcare workers who risk their lives every day to help others. As an unexpected bonus, I sound better everywhere else. Love Earth. Be well. Neil. So that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, and that's how I feel about it. And I almost wanted to read this quote to that guy today, but I'm like,
I know.
Unfortunately,
nobody wants the real information. People want a quick dopamine hit people have like rage that they need to, they have their like outrage,
like an addiction. Is it?
Yeah. Like, it's like you have to, find things to be outraged over. And so people,
well, I think a lot of it is kind of a projecting or a mirroring, because it's easier for people to be outraged that there's this other that is keeping them from things rather than doing the work on themselves. To like you were saying, liberate yourself, you know?
Yeah. Or even just read the quote, which of course, I mean, it's like in literally the same statement where he said it's either Rogan or Young. I mean, he wasn't saying like, I'm putting you in a hostage situation and you have to get right. He wasn't, at no point did he say constrain Joe Rogan's speech. He never said that. He said, you can have Neil Young, which was a rhetorical statement in the context he was saying it, because he was saying in that same statement that he is not going to contribute to and be part of a platform that supports things he doesn't agree with. And that's every artist's right. Right. And so he was at that moment asking to be and actively working to have his stuff removed. Like, he was making the move. He wasn't saying, it wasn't a standoff. He was like, I'm leaving and here's why. And
he knows they're not going to get rid of Joe. I mean, they spent $100 million, whatever the fucking crazy deal. Like, he's not going anywhere.
No.
And like Neil says over and over again, he has always had big problems with Spotify. They don't pay their artists. The sound quality is the worst out of all the platforms.
So on that note, Derek, to kind of transition a little bit to this, and we're going to wrap up very soon.
Yeah.
But, as an artist who's been doing it since pre-Spotify and who's been making money from music pre-Spotify to now, how do you feel about streaming in general, Spotify in general, even removed from this specific argument?
Sure. Well, it's really interesting, because if you go back, I was reminded recently that I have an old Tumblr blog that's still online, apparently. And there is this, it was back when, I guess it was probably when Spotify first launched in the first year or two. And I was making a case for why you'll make more money giving your music away for free than streaming it on Spotify. But my argument was about Noisetrade's model of giving music away in exchange for data.
I just have to tell you, I definitely illegally took some of your music from Napster.
Great. I mean,
House Show album I took from Napster, but I made up for it because when Mockingbird came out, I tipped you like $25.
Well, there you go. I mean, so it's fine. It all works out. Yeah. But I have from the beginning had issues with Spotify, as have any artists who read and really listen and pay attention. I mean, anybody would. And my whole thing is, like, I don't have a problem with artists using Spotify as a tool. My initial, as long as they understand the costs, and they're huge.
Right.
But as long as those are investments they are intentionally making, oh, that's fine with me. As long as you're making a willful, clear-eyed decision, you have all the data, then fantastic, go forth. But for me, my initial problem was that it appeared as such a monopoly because there was no real competition in the market for Spotify. Anytime anybody would hear the word Spotify, it was ubiquitous with the word streaming. And so you would talk about how you were anti-Spotify. People were like, you know that streaming is the future. And I was like, shit, yes, streaming is the future. I'm talking about a company, like one company who's doing it super inequitably, you know, for artists. So no, obviously the public had spoken at that point about access over ownership. I get why that is preferable to people. I don't really have, and all that really does is put the impetus back on artists to creatively solve that problem of, all right, well, so if now the recorded music is a loss leader for other ways to make a living at this, how do we creatively solve our way out of this? And how do we enhance the listening experience or intentionally create scarcity in the digital world in a way to build value for ourselves and a way for ourselves to make some kind of a living wage out of it? And I actually love creative problem solving. So I didn't mind all that Napster and Spotify bullshit that happened because I get to use every muscle. And so I personally like that sort of thing. But I always had an issue with Spotify because obviously not only how poorly inequitably they pay artists, which is so well known at this point, but also how inconsistently they pay, because at least Apple, they pay the same rate to Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish as they do to me or you guys or anybody, because those are rates that are available that everybody can see and they're consistent. But with Spotify, the thing about Spotify from the very beginning is the whole thing started as such a racket, and it kind of really still is, because Spotify went and they paid all this money to license the rights for basically all the recorded music on the planet from all the people who owned all the rights to all the recorded music on the planet. Unfortunately, those were not the artists, and it rarely is the artist. Mm. Someone else owns the rights. So Spotify came in, paid a crap ton of money, tons of money, to all the rights holders to license all the music to have it on their platform. How much of that money that they paid, all that huge amounts of investment into licensing, do you think went to the artists? It's rhetorical, I'll tell you, none. It went to the people who own the rights, which is going to be the labels, it's going to be the publishers, it's going to be, but it's not the artist.
Right.
I mean, especially not at that time. Increasingly, artists do own their recorded masters and their rights and their publishing, things like that. But it's still fairly rare. It was extremely rare at that time. And then, after doing that, so far the artists have gotten what? Nothing. The rights holders have a ton of money. Those are the people who own the artists' careers. Okay. Then Spotify divvies up equity in the company and actually gives it to all those same companies who own all of that content. So they literally put a bet on every horse and they bring everybody in. And how much of the equity in Spotify that was then divvied out to all of the people who own all that content do you think was given to artists? It's another rhetorical question. None.
Right.
And so everybody benefits, but the people who are literally generating the content. And so it was real. And then obviously the streaming rates. Now here's the thing. I get that it took Spotify and it took everybody, and it's still taking everybody. God knows it's still taking YouTube and everybody and Facebook a long time to figure out how to balance the scale of monetization for attention and finding some way of making this thing make money. And it's just, you're not going, the business was so inflated for so long that you're just not going to replace the stranglehold that the $18.99, plastic compact disc, I mean, you're just not gonna ever get to those levels again. You're never gonna, when somebody heard one song on the radio, they'd have to go to Tower Records and buy an $18.99 CD with 11 more songs or 14 more songs on it to get that one song. That was a racket. So the minute that Apple uncoupled all those albums from each, and you could just buy the one song, already we're fucked. But we're not really fucked. It's just that the model that's worked for a long time and that really has been a racket and was ripe for disruption, it is gone. And so I understand that it takes time to rebuild a new economy around a new model. I get that. But the fact that Spotify is still consistently at the very bottom of the list, and yet they are the largest of all of these platforms in terms of what they pay out in streaming to artists.
Well, like you said,
it sucks. I mean,
I'm glad that it came to that, because that's the thing that I've been like, I love Neil. I love what he's doing. And I think, I mean, it's like almost a whole different thing. But what I've been most frustrated about is that it's like, that's the argument that I want to hear people making.
Right.
And I know some people have in the past, and you know, like Taylor Swift, I know, like, held out for a long time. But like, I feel like there's a missed opportunity here. I really want to hear from Neil, like, that talk of like, how can we, okay, like, I'm mad about Joe Rogan, but that was just the thing that ticked me, you know, flipped me over the edge.
I think that for Neil, I think he probably feels like a broken record at this point, because he has made these arguments and has been since
over and over again.
It doesn't seem to be changing anybody's minds.
Yeah. And for him, I think even more than the, you know, the fact that artists aren't getting paid, I think a lot of it for him, because he's been so vocal for so long about the quality.
That's
his biggest thing. Now, you know, like, he's willing to kind of promote talk about a monopoly. Amazon's the biggest fucking thing in the world.
It slightly annoy me how much he was like all in for Amazon.
Yeah, he's promoting Amazon because I went on Neil Young Archives, and I'm doing the 4-month free thing
on Amazon.
The quality is fucking way. I was listening to Spotify before, and now I listen to you today, Derek, through Amazon, and it's great.
Same thing with Tidal, and they pay artists even more than Amazon. They pay artists over a cent per stream.
Ironically, Napster's streaming platform is consistently the one that pays the most.
Isn't that wild?
I think that's awesome. I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Well, Derek, I have more questions, and I know Luke was talking about wrapping up. We want to try to be respectful of your time.
I got to cook my wife's scallops. I told her I would cook.
Well, you can go do that, but I have more questions.
It's my fucking hard drive. Here's the thing. This is why I knew it would be dangerous to have Derek on, because all three of us want to talk to Derek about a million things.
Well, no, we grew up because we didn't even scratch the fucking surface on deconstruction.
I know. Like, well, that's not what this is. This is a Neil Young podcast.
Yeah,
for us,
whatever.
Even
I know.
We
whatever.
Never talk.
We'll have to do. We'll do a part two. Yeah. We'll just have to do a part two.
Yes.
Give me time to write a few.
I really want to talk about, because I mean, we talked about the Patreon-ness of the Jesus hypothesis, but we didn't talk about the sort of
also the skillet thing that just came out too. That I feel like John is so
we could do a whole episode on John Cooper for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I just, there's so much to get into. And also, I'm a big I'm a weirdo. So I wanted to talk to you about Pete. And
I was so stoked to get to do that.
Yeah, yeah, hey, all kinds of stuff, and a liturgist and everything. Yeah, I'm a. Yeah, I feel like maybe you guys is, I don't know, it's all different for everyone, but Luke's still sort of, you go to a cool church right now, Luke. Like, I don't have anything.
I'm Episcopalian now, and I love it. It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I still haven't found that, like, thing to fill.
All right,
you know,
Bono.
Like, and I still
Listen, I know what you're doing. We have to wrap because
No, we don't have to. You just have to make scallops for your wife.
Yeah, I want to make scallops for my wife. We'll do a part two for sure.
All right.
I want to plug Derek's Patreon. It's patreon.com/DerekWebb, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Or you can just go to my website, either one. Yes. Hopefully if you go looking, you'll find it.
Did you write out all that stuff? Like all those words and all that connecting shit that's like on, you wrote all that out. Wow.
Oh yeah. That's the idea of the cover was the, and you'll see, if you go to the website, there's a big picture of it, but it's basically almost all the lyrics I've ever written back to the first Cayman's Call record written out on a whiteboard. And then like trying to make connections, like I'm trying to figure out how all this fits together, how it all belongs together. And how to bring it with me. And it's just hypothesizing about where I've been and where
I'm going. Well, yeah, we'll have to do a part two just to talk about that. Cause I would love to talk to you more about that.
I'd love to. Let's do it.
Definitely check out Derek's music. The temptation is for you to label him as an evangelical or an ex-evangelical or whatever, but he's just a really good singer-songwriter. One of my favorite songs he ever wrote, it's called I Want a Broken Heart. And Russ, that's the first song we ever covered when we started Town Meeting.
Yeah, Town Meeting wouldn't exist kind of without Derek Whip songs.
Oh, man.
I just want to say it's easy to – the temptation is to label him and he's not. Like if you're
– Yeah, it's like Neil.
Most of our listeners are not – they don't identify as religious or not. But definitely check out his music.
Thank you for that.
Is beyond genre. If you like acoustic stuff, he does that.
I've just been doing it for a long time. That's all.
Yes.
I'm gonna hop on that too. I want to back it up. If you're listening to this podcast and you love Neil, what they said earlier about Derek is true. You've had that spirit for a long time, man. Yeah. Well,
thank you.
For sure.
Really means a lot from you guys.
Yeah. Well,
Derek, go ahead, Luke.
No. What?
Hypothesis.
Well, I want to end on a lighter note, and I want to ask. So, Derek, me and Russ, obviously, when the pandemic hit, our 2020 was fucking booked to the gills, and all of it got wiped out. So we were going to be
main stage with Willie Nelson.
Yeah, we were going to go. Yeah, dude, it got erased.
Whole thing.
In order to kind of cope with that and just to deal with our own mental health, me and Russ talked about how much we love Neil. We talked to a local radio guy, that guy Mike, who's not here because he's trying to get laid right now. about our Neil obsession, we said, let's do a podcast about Neil just to kind of cope with it.
Yeah, yeah. But
if you could do a podcast about one artist, who's your artist? You can't pick Rich Mullins.
Such a great question.
Why can't he pick Rich Mullins?
Because I'm laying that down right now.
I don't know that it would be Rich. No. I think it would probably be Dylan. Because I feel like I've learned everything from Bob Dylan, and I am as obsessive about Dylan as you guys are about Neil Young for sure.
Something else I got to write down for part two then. Jesus. Yeah.
I mean, I could talk for hours and hours about Dylan.
What's
sure.
your go-to album? Your Dylan number one. Why is it?
Oh my God. I mean, there's exactly.
Blonde on Blonde.
I mean, I like Blonde on Blonde.
Blood on the Tracks is way better than
Blood on the Tracks.
I love Blood on the Tracks. I love all the 60s records, obviously.
Yeah, Highway 61, man.
Highway 61, Another Side of Bob Dylan. But like Times Are Changing, honestly, is probably one that I listen to the most. I'll tell you the ones that I listen to the most though, is going to be all of the bootleg records. And he's got so many of them. He puts one out every couple of years. Yeah. And it's like, there's one that came out, I would have to look it up, but there's one that came out that was all bootleg stuff, a lot of live stuff and a lot of, secondary and alternative takes of tunes, of stuff that was all kind of early. It was like kind of 60s, probably 65 to 70 in there. And there was a bootleg series that came out maybe just in the last couple of years. And it has got some tremendous, tremendous stuff on it. And
my favorite stuff is The Band, with The Band. Cause I'm a huge fan of The Band. Levon Helm's my idol. So
absolutely, yeah. Dude, I'm a huge, huge, we watch The Last Waltz on Thanksgiving every single year. Local art movie theater, the Bell Court here in Nashville shows it on Thanksgiving every year.
They weren't sure if Dylan was going to actually come out and play though.
Did I know
that? Yeah.
Yes, I do. And he
and
was
Neil's got the Neil's got the big Coke.
I know. And Dylan was only, I believe, contracted to do one song.
Yeah.
And he turns around after and kind of looks at, you know, Robbie and they just kind of shrugged their shoulders at each other. And it was this huge deal. Like all their people, like we're all, and they wound up playing another, you know, like they got on stage and it just all happened. But I do know that they didn't know till literally he walked on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all like, what the fuck are we going to do? And
did you like
I love
his,
it's become a holiday tradition.
Yeah.
Not just for you, but Last for like Waltz a lot is, of people is, to watch.
At the beginning, he says, Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. You know, like,
Did you like Dylan's, was it 2020 or 2021, his most recent album? Loco is my go-to for new music. Actually, me, Loco, and two other guys, every December we talk about our top 10 albums of the year. We're super quirky about it. But he was trying to get me to listen to it, and I still can't.
I really dig it.
I really, really loved the new record.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Yep, really loved it. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that Dylan, I mean, here's the deal. It's like, if you're going to commit, you have to commit. And it's like, Dylan has a way of weeding out people who don't really deeply love him. And as soon as you hit like the late 80s and his voice starts to go, I mean, it gets rough for a handful of records in there. But it's like, you know what I mean?
But you can imagine, Luke and I had some issues with
Christian albums. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't like those. But on his new one, I feel like he found a way without being melodic to like his I mean, the lyrics are like unbelievable.
Yeah, he's writing really well right now, and I think he's singing better than he has in a handful of years.
I agree. He's found a way to use his voice.
He's found a way to use it, and I'm personally into it. And honestly, it just doesn't matter to me. You know, he's just a walking institution at this point. And so,
I mean, that's how I am with Neil. I'm gonna take it whatever I can get. I'm gonna consume it. I'm gonna, you know. Yeah.
There's a Neil versus Dylan podcast coming up on this podcast.
Oh,
there's
a couple
episodes coming up.
Well, because we're getting down to the wire here
you definitely.
Well, yeah. I like it.
Hey, Derek, can we send you a vinyl of our newest record?
Hold on, Russ. Save this for till we're done.
Why? Why are we not?
I don't want to thank you to Derek Webb for joining us. If you want to check out more of his stuff, it's derekwebb.com. Definitely join his Patreon. Grab his albums. He's got vinyl. He's got CDs. He's got all of it. He's a fan of giving his music away for free. So literally just Facebook message him and he'll probably send you some shit for free.
Yeah, or go to Spotify because it's basically free there anyway.
That's a great point.
All right, so Derek, what happens after we die?
Stop. Shut the fuck up.
I wanted to answer so bad.
Go to townmeetingmusic.com. We're slowly starting to book again. We're playing in Philly, New York, up in Canada. We're trying to book in June. We have a new album coming out. Check that out. Thanks to our patrons. Thanks to everyone who listens. And Loco, thanks for always being up.
Yeah, Loco.
Hey, man. I had a blast. Thanks for having me.
Loco, can you give us a titty bird squawk real quick, too? Nice. Very good.
Science proves quality sleep is vital to your mental, emotional, and physical health. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to help keep you both effortlessly comfortable. And it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. So you're at your best for yourself and those you care about most. Life-changing sleep, only from Sleep Number. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $899. Save $200, plus free home delivery when you add an adjustable base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
Not just bikes. We also make a rower.
Have you ever tried to row? Too hard.
Not with Form Assist. It actually teaches you how to row. So it doesn't matter if you're a first-time rower or a seasoned pro. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com. Code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.